So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game!
Brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. And man, I've got to tell you, we got a show for you. We normally spend the first part of the show going over local issues and updating on the news. I'm going to start getting into topics. We've got a jam-packed hour for you. I was able to squeeze a Councilman David James for about 10 or 15 minutes max. He has meetings and stuff to get to, but he was very, very cordial and agreed to come on air so we could discuss this Barbara Shanklin mess. And then, of course, Councilman James will be followed up right after first break, and we'll bring Chris Toby in, and we'll talk about the pension crisis in Kentucky. With that said, Councilman James, thank you so much for agreeing to come on air. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you coming. I tell you, you obviously know why I contacted you. We have so many questions about the Barbara Shanklin situation. And just for a little background, as you know, and our listening audience knows, I believe it was last year, Councilwoman Judy Greene was impeached for a lot of similar conduct to Barbara Shanklin. Of course, I was the one who filed the charges and saw them through to fruition. But one of the biggest questions, and I hate to get right into it on you. I know you're busy, and I'm trying to get as much in as I can. But one of the biggest questions, was there some kind of a major difference between the Judy Greene case and Barbara Shanklin? Because it was odd that the council voted to find Barbara Shanklin guilty, but fell a vote short of impeaching her like they did Judy Greene. What was the biggest difference here?
I think the major difference, at least for me, I can't speak for other people, but for me, the difference was, with Judy's case, there was evidence that there was personal gain involved in that particular case. And in Barbara Shanklin's case, it was just the opposite.
Okay. I mean, I guess the follow-up question to that would be, what specific was the gain that Judy Greene gave that Barbara Shanklin didn't? Because as I recall from the charges I filed, they essentially were the fact that Judy Greene's family benefited. And of course, I know she got some benefit from the 100 Black Men grant, which was the basis for my complaint. She received plaques and awards for giving money. She directed the money. Was there something specific that she gained that would have made this different than Barbara Shanklin?
Well, there is an exchange of money or freeing up of money, which allowed her to obtain derby tickets.
Okay. So Judy Greene actually did benefit primarily Judy Greene. It wasn't her family that was the issue for the impeachment process. The fact that Judy Greene actually benefited herself.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the biggest difference. Okay. I guess the second question would probably be regarding Barbara Shanklin's grandson. I didn't notice, and correct me if I'm wrong, sir, I didn't notice where that charge of her grandson being paid while he was in prison or anything was brought before the council court. Was there a reason for that, or was that not part of the ethics commission, or what?
That was not part of what was forwarded over from the Ethics Commission, because my understanding is that at the time that he was hired to be, well, there's a few things. One is that when he was hired to work for her, she asked permission from the Ethics Commission and obtained it to hire him. So, therefore, that wasn't the issue. The other issue that some people spoke to me about was, you know, well, she works for Metro Council and, you know, he's working for Metro Government. Well, there's a lot of people that work in City Hall that have relatives that work in Metro Government. So that's not
right.
Not the issue either.
Well, I mean, nepotism runs rampant in Metro Government. I mean, you can't have thousands of jobs like that without somebody being related. I'm actually in agreement with you there.
Right.
You know, and as far as, if I'm not mistaken, and I've got to put this out there and protect the council court, actually, in this particular situation, because if I'm not mistaken, the ethics rules basically say that Barbara Shanklin's grandson can work there as long as she doesn't have direct supervision of him. Is that correct?
I believe that was correct, yes.
Okay, so that was why it didn't come before the court. Okay. Another thing, since we're talking about that, and that wasn't considered by the court because it wasn't brought before the court, was there any piece of evidence that was publicized that, you know, we had so many things that were publicized. What exactly was brought to the court, or was there something that was publicized that wasn't presented to you guys other than Barbara Shanklin's grandson? I mean, it seemed like the evidence the public was told about didn't really coincide with what you guys were charged with. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I think so. You know, part of the information that came out during the council court was that, you know, I get a lot of emails from people saying, why didn't you kick her off? You know, she just started that program to be able to, you know, get some things for her and her family. And that's the furthest from the truth. The reality is she was encouraged to start the program by the prior administration. So it would help the city qualify for $1 million weed and seed grant. And it did, in fact, do that. And we did, in fact, get that $1 million weed and seed grant. So that information did not come out during all the publicity beforehand. Another piece of information that had not come out in the media that I thought was significant was that the ex-offender program was actually monitored or supposed to be monitored and ran by the Corrections Department. And Mark Bolton, who was the Corrections Department director, testified to that fact during his testimony and said that Corrections was directly responsible for the operations of that program, its failures and its good things. So to hold Barbara Shanklin responsible for it when she, in fact, was not the person responsible for it seemed to be a little bit odd.
Well, I'll actually agree with you to that on a certain extent because, you know, I've been against the findings since the very beginning. And, you know, quite honestly, you know, you talk about Jerry Averson, the prior administration. You can't say that, I understand. I certainly can. This wasn't anything new for Jerry Averson to try to get free money in here that he can finagle. Okay, so we've got the Corrections Department, Mark Bowden, is supposed to be overseeing this program. And how did this end up coming back to Barbara Shanklin instead of Mark Bowden? I mean, you know, the publicity was that Barbara Shanklin was running the neighborhood, the Newburgh neighborhood group, and she was writing the checks from it, the checks from the money that she was actually getting from the Metro Council. You know, that has to be, that is a major ethical conduct, and I understand you guys found her guilty of that, but why didn't that rise to the level of removal?
For me, it's about whether or not Barbara Shanklin did anything to violate the rules. Now, the rules specifically did not come into play that would have prevented that until January of 2012. The rules were put in place December of 2011. In December of 2011, Barbara Shanklin said, hey, with these new rules, I guess that means that I can't be doing the things that I had been doing before. And they told her, no, you can't. And she didn't do it anymore after that. So, you know, for me, it was a matter of whether or not she gained personal benefit, gained personal money. The rules were not in place until January of 2012. After January of 2012, she did not break any of those rules. And, you know, we all make mistakes in life. Now, was the program successful? No. Was she probably too close to the program? Yes. Was Corrections supposed to be running it? Yes. Did they do a horrible job of doing that? Yes. And were mistakes made along the way? And did she do some things paperwork-wise that she shouldn't probably done? Yeah. Is that worth being kicked off the Metro Council over? To me, the answer was no.
Well, I can understand that. I mean, I really can. I'm still in disagreement with her being there, but I definitely understand your point of view. And for the record, for you guys that are listening, I mean, you know, Councilman David James doesn't make these decisions lightly, folks. Councilman David James was a career officer, a retired LMPD, the first chief of the KBI, the Kentucky Bureau of Investigation, that Greg Stumbo instituted, and, you know, a spokesman for LMPD for a lot of years. I remember the James Taylor shooting and you going on air. That was the first time I had come into who you were, and you going on air
right.
and showing how that was feasible. And, you know, so the respect level from me for you and your opinion is up there, and you know that. And I've got to be fair to my audience to tell them that as well, because you've got so, I mean, you're used to seeing this from both sides of the coin.
Absolutely. And I don't expect everybody to agree with my decision. And it wasn't a decision that I made lightly. But I have to say that every time I made the decision, whether it was James Taylor shooting or Barbara Shanklin, I did what I felt was right. And it's not always the most popular decision, but it is what I feel is right, and it's what I can look in the mirror and face myself with every day.
Well, trust me, I have to live with that every day myself, as you know. I'm a public piranha myself, so I definitely relate to that. Two real quick things, and I know we're running at the edge of that 10 minutes, I promised you. Quick things. Council Court, Aubrey Williams, did you guys take anything – with Aubrey Williams and his ridiculous accusations and the way that he handled this whole thing, did you guys buy anything this guy was saying, or are you at liberty to talk about that? I mean, when he came up with the religious argument in the middle of what's supposed to be representative of a court of law, if you will, I he went above and beyond. Were you guys just appalled at his behavior, or is that something you can talk about?
The religious argument that he made, I didn't know about until after council court was over,
But
I read about it in the paper.
Okay.
So while we were sitting there, we didn't know. We just knew they were arguing. We didn't know what they were arguing about.
Okay. Fair enough. And finally, if you can, sir, just real quick, I've got to address this. I disagree with it, but I've got to address it. What do you say about the charges of racism by some in this community? Because you had 5 African-American members of the council, including yourself, that voted to keep Barbara Shanklin on. But, you know, nobody wants to talk about Dan Johnson and Brent Ackerson, who are both white. So they're trying to make this a racist slant, which I totally disagree with. How do you respond to the community on that?
Well, the way I feel about it, I spoke about this the other day. You know, I am not a racist. You know, I am a very open-minded individual. My wife is Caucasian. I have 2 wonderful children. And so, you know, the way I look at that is that the charging committee for the council that charged Barbara Shanklin that got us into council court was all Caucasian. And that was not a racist move on anyone's part. It just happened to be that 5 Caucasian people decided that that's what they wanted to do. And that's what they did. Nothing racist about that in any way, shape, or form. And because... 5 Metro Council members that happened to be African American decided not to throw her off the council court, along with 2 other Caucasian council members. It's a racist move, and you know that is not it at all in any way, shape, or form. So, for people to say that and to say some of the racist things that they've said towards me and my family, I take that very personal. And it's not only personal, but it's not true. So that's where I am with all that.
Well, any time a charge of racism is out there, it's always personal. And I can't help but wonder myself, and, you know, at the time the decision was made on the Barbara Shanklin case, you know, we also had a decision made on a national story with Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman. So, you know, when you look at that in particular, I wonder if a lot of this racism charge wasn't unnecessarily stirred up because of that case itself. I mean, this community is divided just like communities all across America right now over that one case, and I wonder if that did come into question there as well. So that's just my opinion. Councilman, I know you've got to go, and I appreciate your limited time. I really do. Thank you so much for joining us, and hopefully we can get you back on soon to talk. Oh, one quick question. Are you guys in the midst of doing anything to change the law so we can prevent this kind of behavior going forward? You know, all the mistakes that Barbara Shanklin made that you guys are admitting to, are we doing anything right now trying to kind of seal those holes, if you will?
Sure. There are some loopholes in the process that we are looking at right now, and we will be making changes to those particular rules and laws, some dealing with state KRSs others dealing with our regulations and our rules, our resolutions, and city ordinances as it relates to neighborhood development funds and capital infrastructure funds and our code of ethics and all of that stuff. And so pretty soon there will be some conversation. As a matter of fact, first committee meeting about all that is tomorrow at Metro Council.
Okay, super, super. So you guys are already on top of that. Thank you so much, Councilman. Yep. I appreciate your time. I really do.
Okay, right. Thank you, sir.
All right, thanks. That was Councilman Dave James, folks. Councilman James, of course, represents District 6, and, you know, we've been wanting to get some answers on the Barbara Shanklin case and how or why the vote came back and Barbara didn't lose her job. The one thing I didn't know was that the biggest difference, according to Councilman James and his opinion, was the fact that Judy Green benefited personally. She took cash back and then bought Derby tickets with it. You know, I can see that being a difference between her and what Barbara Shanklin did. You know, I still think Barbara Shanklin should have been removed, but Councilman David James was willing to come on air and voice his opinion and stand by his decision. And for that, we have to commend him for that, because not a lot of people want to do that these days. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, yes, you guessed it, we're going to bring on Chris Tobey, and we're going to talk about Kentucky Fried Pensions and what's really going on in Kentucky. And, folks, I've got to tell you, you may be alarmed. I'm not. I'm used to this pay-for-play crap, but you may be alarmed. So let's see what happens. We'll get Chris on the air, and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
Politics.com. where you can find a replay of this show and just about every show we've ever done there. We are back with Chris Tobey. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing great, Ed.
Man, I tell you, for you guys who don't know who Chris Tobey is, Chris Tobey is an investment guru, if you will. The man is intelligent as hell. Served on the KRS board, handling you as the only investment consultant they had. And he has also authored a book called Kentucky Fried Pensions. And I must tell you guys this. If you want to know the inner workings of Kentucky state government and pay to play, you have got to purchase this book. I kid you not. I have read it, and it's one of the rare books that I've picked up that I did not want to put down in recent years. So Chris, I've got to tell you, man, you know, I don't normally plug people and books and things like that. But in this case, you've done one hell of a job outing everything. And for myself, I personally appreciate it.
Your last guest here, I mean, I think we just got to tie – people in Louisville need to start paying attention to what's going on in Frankfort a lot more. I mean, you know, they just spent – the Metro Council spent 3 or 4 weeks on Barbara Shanklin, which is probably $100,000 at most. We're talking 1,000 times that amount of money every year that's being, you know, wasted here at the retirement system, and a lot of that's Jefferson County money. Jefferson County, and when you add up the Louisville Metro Government, MSD, water company, and the school district non-teachers pump in $120 million a year into KRS, into the black hole down in Frankfort. And again, I don't think we're getting what our money's worth back out of that. And I think that's something your viewers, people need to pay a lot more attention to what's going on in Frankfort. There's a lot of publicity around Washington, but Frankfort has a lot of deep, dark secrets, and people need to start knocking some things over and start looking there, because a lot of our tax dollars are going there.
Well, I tell you, I appreciate you saying that, because we actually knock everything over on this show and over at LouisvillePolitics.com, as you know. We take them all on. We don't care. What's interesting is that this whole Kentucky pension plan, you know, Steve Beshear went public, well, I think it was last year or the year before. He was trying to sell everybody that he had this great plan that was going to save the Kentucky pensions and put us in the black again and blah, blah, blah. And to be honest with you, when I heard the plan, and I believe it had to do with vehicle tax and other stupid stuff, gimmick accounting, you know, really at most 1 year, maybe $80 to $100 million, but that's just a drop in the bucket to how much we're underfunded, right?
Well, there's, you know, it's worse than that. I mean, the underfunding's in the $30 billion plus level. But what we have is a structural deficit in Kentucky. You know, our constitution in the state, we're supposed to have a balanced budget. But what happened is year after year, our budget's basically decided by three people, the governor, the speaker, and the head of the Senate. And so this has been a bipartisan thing done in Frankfort. There have been Republicans, you know, sometimes there have been two Democrats and one Republican, and sometimes two Republicans and one Democrat. But they have, for the last 10 years, underfunded this pension $500 to $1 billion a year, which means what the actuaries tell you to put in to this pension in the health care, they put in $1 billion less. And, you know, it was a pretty simple explanation. Republicans can't be for a tax increase or they'll get a primary opponent, and the Democrats can't cut education enough or they could get a primary opponent. So the decision was just to take it out of the pension. It was the only place they could get it. And they've been doing this for 10 years straight, and it's just running out of time. So what Beshear did is we have a $1 billion a year deficit, a structural deficit. His extra $100 million means it's only a $900 million a year deficit. So we're only digging a hole, additional hole, another $900 million a year, instead of $1 billion a year.
That is so comical. I tell you, I find it interesting when I'm looking through this. As one example, the Kentucky teachers, they have about $26 billion in liabilities, and only about half of that in assets. And the judicial, I mean, if you want to go down as far as the judicial only has $300 million in liabilities, but they only have $150 million in assets. You know, that always seems to be the biggest situation here. And when I'm looking at all of this stuff, and I'm reading your book, and again, you've done a fantastic job with it, I'm reading your book, and I'm starting to look at some bigger pictures. According to your book, 27% – KRS is only funded 27%. And
that's the state worker plan. That is the single worst funded plan in the country, state plan. Worse than California, worse than New York, worse than even any of the individual Illinois plans. It is three times worse than Detroit. Detroit is 77% funded. This is 27% funded.
And I'm glad you went there, because that's one of the things we've been talking about, because, you know, Detroit obviously had a bunch of graft, greed, and corruption going on up there, which destroyed the city, ran people out, destroyed the city. But, you know, we're looking at a lot of things here. But when we look at the pension costs, there's a lot of different cities around the country right now, including Birmingham, Alabama, and other people who are filing bankruptcy. And one of the things that they're claiming is their pension costs, that they can't afford the pensions anymore. So when we look at 27% funded, Kerr's plan, you know, there was an article just a few weeks ago, I believe it was Business Week, put an article out that said Kentucky's pension plans would be the next to file bankruptcy. Do you believe that?
Now, the problem is there's some legal issues with that. We can go into that. States under the U.S. Constitution, most people's interpretation is a state cannot file bankruptcy now.
Okay.
So what has happened is that when Governor Scheer came up with this great new pension fix, seven counties, which is the mental health agency here in Louisville, filed for bankruptcy to get
out
of this.
They're nonprofit, right.
So some of the entities can start filing bankruptcy. And, you know, I was just thinking the other day that Jefferson County Public Schools has huge unfunded liabilities. Remember, they are the largest single holder of Kentucky teachers' retirement, and they're the largest single holder of CERS because of the non-teachers. Jefferson County Public Schools is hugely involved in the retirement systems, much more than anybody has a clue in Louisville. And it's a big part of why they had to their problems with their budgets have been that their pension costs have gone way up from the plans in Frankfurt have really upped that. And that's been a hidden pressure that's caused some of these issues in Jefferson County Public Schools.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up because, as you know, they just increased taxes once again for the sixth straight year. And that seems to be the biggest thing is they can't cover their expenses. When you look at their normal everyday expenses through JCPS, when you go through their books and you go through their audits, and believe me, folks, it'll destroy your brain having to look at this crap all day long. But essentially, most of their stuff kind of stay in the same realm of expenditures. The difference is teacher salaries, which, of course, affect the pensions, and the pension payout plans continue having to be more and more and more. And that's what the real tax money is for. They're complaining that they can't get books, but that's not the truth. They've got the money for the books, but they have to have the money so they can start sinking more into these pensions. You know, so when we look at Kerr's plan, we look at the 54% Kentucky teachers retirement system, and we continue going through all of this stuff. What I'm gradually seeing here, and I'm looking at your funding ratios and your ARC contributions and stuff, I'm seeing a serious drop-off in the ratios. You know, what is – I guess here's the thing. We want to know what caused this crisis.
I think death spiral is the name, what I call it.
Yes, sir. I was going to let you do that. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know you did. But when we look at this, I mean, what is the big cause of this? We understand the governor, the speaker, and the Senate president sit there and screw everybody because they're too damn worried about election. But how can we force a change on this? Because here we've got the politicians, you know, sitting there. They raise taxes. They fire the teachers, or they screw the pensions. So they screw the pensions, as we know. We're looking at, in 2010, you know, percent of ARC paid, the actuary stuff, 41.3% is all the KERS paid in. You know, we're looking at this kind of stuff throughout your book and the different things that we have. And it's startling to me. I look at Rye Blagojevich in Illinois, and I look at the scams there. They were using their pension funds to even go so far as to buy a Senate seat for Jackson. Are we going to be able to avoid the Illinois comparison? Are we going to be able to avoid going down that road? Is there a way to stop this?
Well, you know, that's the trouble is, I mean, it's a sinking ship. I don't know. It may be too late. I mean, the business leaders in Chicago found out almost too late that the guys down in Springfield have kind of just destroyed their entire state. And, you know, Indiana's already taking businesses away from Illinois. And I think they're already starting to take them away from Kentucky. Our media here just doesn't want to talk about it. I was on Mandy's show on 84HAS, and right after me, Mike Pence, the Indiana governor, came on and goes, "Oh, we have an 80% funded pension. Come over here." That is the leading indicator to any business moving in this in a region is a unfunded pension like this. We're not going to get any new business from out of town to move here because they know that a corporate income tax rate may be coming up next, because that's what they did in Illinois. They raised them 40%. And believe me, Indiana is going to tell them, oh, you don't want to go to Kentucky. Look at their pension. So that is already happening, but, you know, the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about it because the governor, you know, cuts them off. Nobody wants to talk about the real problems that this is causing already.
Well, let's go back a little bit, because you started basically in public pensions back in 1997. You worked with former state auditor Ed Hatchett. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So I started.
Okay. From 1997, how did we look in 1997 compared to today, and how did we get such a change?
Well, actually, we were fairly well funded. Our funding ratios were pretty good. I think there was some of the typical good old boy Frankfurt corruption here and there, but as far mm-hmm. as the funding levels, we were over 100% funded to, I think, around 2001, 2002. And it was there, the first person to actually dip into it, Ryan Alessi did a story on this, that it was Jim Ramsey when he was budget director. It was the first person to actually pay less than 100% of the ARC on the pension. And he just did a little bit out, maybe 90% one year. And then and he was working for Governor Patton. Then Governor mm-hmm. Fletcher came in, and he started paying only like 70% of the ARC. And then, you know, at 60, it got down to about 50, and it stayed in the 50s and 40s with Governor Beshear. And that's kind of how we got there. And nobody really cared, or nobody really noticed. From a political point of view, people didn't understand that they were borrowing and that they were basically going around our Constitution and borrowing the money. It took me a while, even as a trustee, to figure out how bad it was, because the information in Frankfurt is so secretive. Everything's so such a lack of disclosure. It's very, very hard to figure out what's going on.
Well, that's amazing to me, because I tell you, I continue, and I'm always amazed whenever we get into these kind of talks, because we know about the good old boy system. We know about pay to play. It's a constant in this state. It's a very, very, very big problem here in Louisville. And we've got some other things we're doing at LouisvillePolitics.com. We'll add a lot of that later this week. But when I go through your book and I'm looking at all of this stuff, a couple of names keep coming up to me that were involved that basically paid a price, and that's former KRS Chief Investment Officer John Krimmel and former Chief Operating Officer Gordon Mullis. This is based on a deal through Summit Realty. Can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, it's a land deal, and this is kind of a legend in Frankfurt. And these guys, I know them a little bit, not extremely well. But they have a very good reputation. They came in there around, I think, 2004-05, and then I think the good old boys are afraid they were going to clean things up, and they found this land deal. A veterinarian bought this piece of land for $400,000, then sold it to the retirement systems 2 months later for $700,000, and then we found out the land's only worth $100,000. So I started, when I was a first trustee, I started digging into this, and I got another agency to do an audit on it, and then as things started going, this veterinarian who made all this money gets killed by a golf cart. And so, you know, she couldn't tell any more stories, and the audit came out that it was very, very – that this is pretty much a frame job. And one good reporter at the Lexington Herald Leader, a guy named John Cheeves, actually brought it out and got it out in the open and really embarrassed the retirement system.
Wow.
So there are some cases of good journalists once in a while in Kentucky in the mainstream, but they're few and far between.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned mainstream, because there's a lot of good journalists out there. They just don't happen to be mainstream, which has always been kind of funny to us. We've done more here at Louisville Politics and NBM Radio than anybody has. You know, but I'm looking at this, and you know, when I see this, what I see is business as usual, because, you know, Perimeter Park West was the name of the subsidiary, it's interesting, because Krimmel and Mullis had actually brokered a deal, made an offer of $500,000, were denied, and then the vet came in and bought it 5 days later for $50,000 less than what they had originally wanted to buy it for, and then added to it. And this kind of stuff, somebody made money on that. We both know that. But, you know, to get back to where we are, though, You know, so in 1997, everything seemed to be okay. We were funding everything, right?
I wouldn't say things were okay.
Well,
far
it was 100% funded,
than they
right?
are today. We still had some of the same old good old boy stuff going on with the investments and things, but the funding levels overall were okay.
Mm-hmm.
So,
okay.
But it
but
was
they were
still
essentially
some
crying.
Of that kind of, you know, Frankfurt's never completely clean.
Yeah, you're right about that. But, I mean, for the most part, though, they were at least showing they were trying to put 100% into the pensions like they were supposed to.
The legislature was, yeah. The legislature and the governor, from their point of view. So there's actually two, you know, it's how the retirement system runs itself, and then the legislature and the governor are the ones actually funded. So the legislature and the governor kept their commitment, kept things solid up until about 2001, 2002. Then it started slipping gradually, and then the hole kept getting wider and wider and wider.
Okay, fair enough. And I'm looking at all this, though, and I'm also seeing some other things here because, you know, a National Review article back in April of this year, you know, it said that, I mean, they even called the governor out and basically made a joke of him because the governor tried to offer $100 million a year, and as you pointed out, there's still $900 million less. But the National Review said Kentucky needs to cough up more than $1 billion a year just to keep this from deteriorating further. That doesn't make it solvent. It just keeps it from getting worse. You know, and then they go on to state that the Kentucky pension system is a horse trading operation. And this is what I really want to get into. We need to start talking about these placement agents, these so-called managers, the SEC investigations that are going on, or the investment agents, I guess they're called. You know, these investment agents.
Well, they're placement agents. They're investment managers who hire. So the KRS doesn't hire the placement agents. What happens is these investment managers, whether they could be a Goldman Sachs or a Blackstone, they hire a placement agent, pay them to get into a state through their political connections. So the actual payment, so the Kentucky Retirement Systems pays investment managers over $50 million a year in non-bid, non-RFP contracts. Those managers use some of that money, kick it back to these guys who placement agents, who then kick it back to somebody else. It's a pretty sophisticated operation.
Which is what they did with Blago, and that's why he's in jail. Look at this, then. It's interesting to me. Is the SEC investigation of these guys still going on in Kentucky?
It is, but they've kind of said they're not going to really go after the system themselves. They're still going and looking at some of the placement agents themselves and the investment managers, but the retirement systems, I think they've kind of been touting it all around that they've been cleared and all this type of thing, and I don't think the SEC is going to pursue. SEC rarely pursues a plan itself or employees of a plan. They're usually going after the investment managers and these so-called placement agents.
So the
investigation is still going on.
Okay, but essentially the deal is they go out and get these placement agents, they pay these placement agents money to work on behalf of the investment agents, and then what happens is the politicians automatically somehow miraculously come up with a great big political donation, and these guys get a cut of the retirement system pension plan, right?
Well, that's how it's worked in other states. I don't know if Kentucky's just, I mean, if you listen to retirement systems, these guys just did all this stuff for free, but in other states they have found political connections. New Mexico, California, New York have been the biggest cases. And in those states, well, in New York and California, you had aggressive attorney generals who went after this. New Mexico, you had an attorney general didn't do anything like we had in Kentucky. So a lot of times the state attorney generals, if they're on the ball, can really do something with this.
I'm laughing internally at that because I know Jack Conway's not going to do a damn thing about anything that's going to go after a Democrat for anything. That's Jack Conway. I don't expect you to respond to that, sir. I know better. But, it's just the truth. I mean, I've dealt with Jack Conway on more than one occasion. His office refuses to bring up any illegal charges against anybody if they're a Democrat or elected. That's just the way it is. And in return, he gets his little campaign contributions as well. And let him come after me. I really don't care. I'm sick of him too. But, you know, when I look at all of this, though, when I'm looking at these investment agents and these placement agents and this scam, and that's essentially what it is, What does Kentucky gain if they're supposedly doing this work for free? Why do we need? Why does Kentucky feel like they need, or the KRS feel like they need, investment agents or placement agents? I don't understand that, because I'm reading along through your book, I'm looking at all these other things, and I'm sitting here thinking, you know, wait a minute. I mean, this overappraisal or underappraisal of property, I should say, you know, like the $500,000 property that miraculously we ended up spending $752,000 for, only to find out that it was assessed for you know, less than $200,000. Or appraised, I'm sorry. When we look at all of that in play, you know, we're looking at a bigger picture here. If these placement agents and investment agents are so important, why would we try to say that they're doing this for free? What do they bring to the table? Because I don't see anything that they bring to the table.
Well, I don't either. And, you know, the standard line is that some of these, you know, some of these small venture capital and private investment firms need a marketing person as a placement agent. And, you know, I just don't buy it. And there's a lot, it's just a lot of games. And it's, you know, and again, and KRS continues to do it. Just today, a front page of the trade press, which is called Pension Investments, they just brought in another five hedge fund managers, paying investing $100 million with them just today. And, you know, they didn't probably use placement agents, but there are other ways. When somebody's being paid the fees, $50 million in fees, they always find ways. I mean, and part of this problem is that the campaign finance rules, you know, these super PACs and all these things are out there. They allow these Wall Street guys all kinds of ways around to enrich people without any trace.
Well, in the defense of the super PACs, and I'm like you, I don't like super PACs either. I think we need to get rid of that. But ultimately, though, these problems and these rating of pension funds were started before the super PACs came into existence. You know, I mean,
it's just a different game to play. It's just another way they play the same old pay-to-play game. There's always a new angle as soon as the super PACs – I mean, you just got to, you know, try to get as much transparency. You got to have board members who will ask questions. I mean, the legislature passed a law that you need to have board members who understand investments, but the governor went ahead and appointed people who didn't understand investments anyhow, because I was asking too many questions and he didn't want to reappoint me.
Yeah, I saw that. You actually started in officially in April of 2009, and if I'm not mistaken, by August, I'm sorry?
2008.
Okay, I'm sorry, 2008. But if I'm not mistaken, it was just a few months later in August that they started keeping you from seeing any records that weren't public record and things like that. Is that correct?
Well, I mean, they were keeping me from day one almost, everything I'd asked for. All kinds of things they would hide. I was the only investment person. They kicked me off the investment committee so they could go put a startup hedge fund and pay a placement agent $2 million. They got a currency manager that they ended up paying $7 million for that I still don't know why they did it. All kinds of things. Just in the book, it just goes on and on, as you well know. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And the thing is, there's no accountability because no one, you know, the auditor and the attorney general don't really care.
Well, I I'm going to go back to this Perimeter Park West and this veterinarian who was killed in one of the strangest killings I've ever seen, a golf cart accident. you know, that defies logic, folks. You can make of that what you will. But when I look at this deal, you also in your book go on and talk about some of the different things that you discovered. For example, you know, the money to buy this property for $752,000 was borrowed from the KRS insurance fund, and that's a direct violation of law, is it not?
Well, I mean, there's so many, you know, I got to a point where I turned in so many violations of law to the attorney general and auditor, I lost count. And then they were all just pretty much ignored. And, you know, the thing is, you know, they pretty much just did what they want. A lot of this stuff was because it got out in the press, and I was involved in that when it originally got out in, like, 2007. They weren't intending it for this to ever get out. So they had to kind of cover their tracks and shift a lot of things around to try to make things kind of look better after it was discovered. They never thought it would ever get out. So that's a lot of the issue around that. But again, the land deal I put on there as an example, people in Frankfurt, but for dollar-wise, you know, it's symbolic. It's only a few $100,000. We're talking in the hundreds of millions on some of these other bad investment deals, the hedge funds and private equity funds and excessive fees and the currency manager. Those things are just so much worse, but they're so complex that they're very difficult to do anything with.
Well, and see, that's what really has me disturbed right now, because, you know, the things that you're bringing to the table in your book, Kentucky Fried Pensions, outlines some of these deals, you know, for maybe $50 to $100 million in investments, in pension investments. But, you know, if you look at this, that was just what you were able to find without having access to anything. What could that amount be?
And again, you know, and I had an attorney, a former SEC attorney who worked for me and did an independent counsel report. They denied him access to lots of documents. And he produced this 30-page report, but the mainstream media in Kentucky refused to print or even acknowledge the existence of this 30-page report. It's an appendix in my book, a 30-page independent counsel report by a former SEC attorney who has done investigations all over the country. And the media is refused to even acknowledge its existence.
And that's interesting, too. And just to show people how political payback works here, guys, you need to really go back to Bill Crumbaugh. Bill Crumbaugh built the Perimeter Park West Complex with KRS already lined up as the tenant. And this is how they do it. They find somebody that they wanted that is political friendly to them. Then they go ahead and buy some land at an overpriced rate. The realtor makes a lot of money. The guy who's selling the property makes more money than it's worth. Then, oh, by the way, then the government's going to come in, basically, and rent the property back. It's crazy. So what they did with PPW is they set up a nonprofit KRS PPW, Perimeter Park West. So that way they could do anything they wanted to with no oversight. And what did they do? They put Bill Crumbaugh in charge of it, and he manages property today on a no-bid contract. This is one of the things that really gets to me is all these no-bid contracts. That's something that's very disturbing throughout this Commonwealth, and it's something that in most cases is not supposed to exist. How do we prove illegality in this kind of thing, Chris? Because I've tried several times.
Well, there's no trail because when you don't have contracts, you don't have things to follow. There's no documentation, and when you don't even have a competitive bidding system for government work, I mean, you know, corruption's just bound to sneak in. I mean, we just hired today $100 million worth of hedge fund managers just today, no RFP, no bid contract. They continue to do this over and over again because no one seems to care in Frankfurt. I mean, they'll make a big deal out of bidding a $30,000 contract for something, but a $30 million contract, they look the other way.
Well, I think that's interesting, too. And for the record, I want everybody to know, you know, Crit Llewellyn, I've been supportive of Crit Llewellyn in a lot of cases because there's a lot of things that she has that I've felt have been done well. But I'm seeing more and more as I'm reading this book, and I'm seeing more and more things that she didn't necessarily do well. And the KRS audits were one of those.
I was on her original steering committee. I worked for the state auditor, and I was a big supporter of hers for a while until she did this audit, and I just have become very, very – this audit was poor work would be a very kind statement to this. I mean, my SEC attorney basically thinks that audit is basically a whitewash. I mean, I pretty much have documented that it's a whitewash.
Well, I noticed in your book, too, you said that the letter that she sent out on that, you know, was essentially a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Oh, that would be on the land deal. That was before the what I call the whitewash audit on placement agents. That would be the first thing she did, yeah.
Okay. So let's get back into some of this placement agents then. We've got a couple of minutes left here. You know, we know they were uncovered in Illinois, New Mexico, California, New York. We've talked about that. You know, for many years here in Kentucky, that's one of the reasons we have one of the most poorly funded state pension funds is because they're only paying about 50% of the actuarially required contribution, or the ARC. When we look at all of this, these placement agents, you can tie basically into just about political fundraising anywhere, can you not?
Yeah, you can, the placement agents. I mean, those are the funding and the corruption. The corruption, I call it the corruption of underfunding, and then the kind of corruption investments are really, they're kind of separate issues, but they kind of bleed over to each other too. And the underfunding is the huge part of it, but the corruption, you know, it's like the underfunding's in the billions, the corruption's in the hundreds of millions. I mean, so they're both huge, but one is a lot huger. I mean, that's a bad word to use, but I mean, we're talking the scale here is just incredible.
And what about those, you know, some of the placement agents really aren't financial. They're not in a financial business anyway. They just do sales. I mean, when you look at somebody like Eileen Kotecki, she raised more than $1 billion for Democratic candidates. And lo and behold, then all of a sudden she gets to be this marketer for hedge funds and private equity firms and ended up with over $6.5 billion in sales. And most of those sales were from what? Government pensions. You know, when you look at some of these things, I don't think that there's any way you can deny or anybody can deny that that's the name of the game. You look at Rob Blagojevich, governor of Illinois, who just went to jail. And it's interesting, too, the last three or four governors have all went to jail in Illinois. That'll tell us something.
A couple of them were even Republicans, too.
Yeah.
I think at least one was Republican, too. So they're not all Democrats.
Actually, there was. Oh, they're not all Democrats. We always refer to the two-party system as a uniparty on this show because we don't think one is any better than the other. But when we look at this, though, a lot of people don't know that part of the FBI investigation had to do with these placement agent abuses that ultimately led to Blagojevich going to jail. You know, and it had to do with the pension, the Illinois teacher retirement systems, and things like that. So when we look at all of this in play, it's not like the SEC itself does not know that there is a pattern of behavior in more than one state involving raiding these pension funds. And from what I understand, what you were telling me earlier, the SEC is basically saying, we're not really going to go after the plan, no big deal. Why would they not go after the plan? Who is holding the SEC back from doing their job?
Well, the SEC remembers a civil thing, so they really fine. They're not criminal. Department of Justice has separate, there have been separate type of investigations. So placement agents in New York have had both the Attorney General go after them criminally and civilly, have had the Department of Justice go after them, and then the SEC. And the SEC has actually been the weak sister in the other states as well. We just don't seem to have any attention here in Kentucky. And the SEC has just kind of backed off. The SEC was going to ban placement agents altogether in, I think, 2008 or 9, but then Wall Street really put the pressure on them, and they backed off a little. So there's always people, you know, Wall Street is really throwing a lot of money around. I mean, I think there are three political forces in this country, conservative, liberal, and Wall Street. And Wall Street buys Democrats and Republicans.
I'm total 100% agreement with you there, and that's the whole thing, because it all comes down to money, and it all comes down to power and party. And, you know, what about the Dodd-Frank Act? You know, this was supposed to be a great thing to help us get to the bottom of this kind of stuff and kind of get some control. And does it really appear that Dodd-Frank really isn't working the way it was supposed to?
Well, again, I became an SEC whistleblower under Dodd-Frank, and that didn't exist before. So I'm thankful for that part of Dodd-Frank. Dodd-Frank's a huge bill. And I'm sure there are hundreds of things in it that have just been ineffective, and then there's a few things that are good. Some things – depends on your point of view, too. So there's just a lot – it's a huge, huge, huge law. But the specific part about the SEC whistleblower program, I'm supportive of. But the thing is, we'll just have to see if the SEC is really going to follow through on it.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
They've got much beholden with Wall Street.
Okay. Fair enough. I tell you what I'd like to do, because we're going to run out of time here in just a couple of minutes. What I'd really like to do is get a hold of you, if I can, sometime tomorrow and see if we can set another night, because I really want to get into some of the problems that happened in California and beyond, and, you know, even New Mexico, the governor down there. And, you know, Tony Resco and all of those guys, I want to get into some of these in deeper detail on some of these stories and maybe talk about MDL and a few other things. Is that okay with you?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you for having me.
Oh, awesome, awesome, awesome. All right, I'll give you a call tomorrow. And we'll see if we can't set something up or send you an email or something, and see if we can't set something up for maybe Monday or Tuesday next week. But I really want to get into details on a lot of those cases, because I think that they're very relevant to a pattern of behavior in other areas that we've run into here. You know, for our listening audience, for example, Birmingham, Alabama, Jefferson County, Alabama, you know, filed bankruptcy at the time. They were the largest municipality to file bankruptcy. And it had to do with a lot of this hedge fund and this bait and switch kind of stuff, you know, interest rate swaps, derivatives, things like that. And
the trouble is the untold story here is that MSD has lost $100 million on the exact same type of swap, but no one will print that none of the mainstream media will talk about that. So we are every time I open my sewer and water bill, I get angry because I know I'm paying for one of those bad LIBOR interest rate swaps, the same things that got Jefferson County, Alabama in trouble.
Exactly, and that's one of the things we've always we've made MSD a target for years here, and we've actually put all that information out there. Tens of thousands of people have read it and pay attention to it, but mainstream media refuses to get involved. And in all honesty, in Louisville, it's primarily because of the Democratic Party. But we're going to expose a lot of that too. Chris, thank you so much. We're going to run out of time. I appreciate it, sir. I'll get a hold of you and we'll bring you back next week. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Ed.
Thank you, Chris. I tell you what, folks, we've just touched the tip of the iceberg here. Just kind of a meet and greet with Chris Toby because there's so much more information out there. I don't think we can do it justice in one show. I'm not even sure we can do it justice in the next show, but we're going to try. We're going to bring Chris back here on Monday or Tuesday and see if we can't just spend a whole hour. Ed Martin will be here too. Ed Martin's financial. He'll love this. And let's see if we can't get a whole hour and get into the big problems. For closing, let me just say this. For the people in Louisville on the Barbara Shanklin issue that are continuing to scream racism, as I play on this show, I play a song by the Eagles called Get Over It. And that's exactly what I'm telling you. Get over it. There is no racism involved in keeping Barbara Shanklin on the council. You had both white and black, 7 votes, decided Barbara Shanklin would stay on the council. Do I agree with that decision? No. I've been very open and honest about that. I went after Judy Green last year to make sure that we had a precedent to holding our elected people accountable, and I don't think that they were true to that precedent. However, there were differences between those two cases, and, some of our council members, like Councilman David James, have stood up, explained their case, and stand by it. Whether you agree or disagree, let's keep racism out of this argument. Now, on the other side of the show, let's talk about Chris Toby and Kentucky Fried Pensions. Folks, this book is riveting. It is riveting. I'm not kidding you. If you want to see what's really going on, how the pay-to-play works when you're dealing with billions and billions of our dollars, our teachers' pensions, our government worker pensions, these pensions that are destroying every city throughout America, you need to buy Kentucky Fried Pensions. I kid you not. Go to Amazon.com. You can buy it there. You can write me at MyViewMatters@AOL.com. I'll send you a link to wherever you need to go. But if you're really concerned about the future of this Commonwealth, I urge you guys to really look at that book, buy that book, pay attention to it. It's already on the bestsellers list, so it's something that a lot of people are paying attention to, and it will keep you informed. But the bottom line is always, get involved, folks. Get involved in what's going on in your neighborhood. Get involved in what's going on in your city. Get involved in what's going on in your state. Because without people like Chris Toby out there telling us about the pension mess, we would be getting further and further behind. Without people like me sitting there filing charges against council members, holding them accountable for bad behavior, they would continue to get away with even more. Without people like Councilman David James and the other 25 members of the council court, we would never get a hearing so that we can determine for ourselves. It's the whistleblowers and the people who stand up in this community that make a difference. And that starts with each and every one of you. That's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, join us. We will be catching up on all the local stuff as much as we possibly can anyway. And, stay tuned. I think you're going to have a good week. I appreciate it. We'll see you tomorrow night at 7. Thank you so much for listening. Take care. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.